Welcome to the Future of Medicine podcast. My name is Dr. Aaron Wenzel, and my hope is simple, that this show helps you along your journey to become the healthiest, strongest, and most vibrant version of you. This podcast is brought to you by Brentwood MD. Brentwood MD is located in Nashville, Tennessee, and provides best-in-class concierge primary care. Learn more about our innovative approach to primary care at brentwoodmd.com. Now, let's explore the future of medicine.
Hey everyone, welcome to the Future of Medicine podcast. My name is Jen Justice, and I'm joined today by Dr. Aaron Wenzel. Hey, Dr. Wenzel, how you doing?
Hey, Jen. It's good to be here.
Great. We're in our new podcast studio. This is so exciting.
It's nice, nice.
Yeah, real nice.
And you're introing.
I'm introing today. So if you're a longtime listener of the podcast, usually Dr. Wenzel does the intro, but we're switching it up today.
And because
we
can.
I'm going to interview you.
That makes me nervous.
You shouldn't be. Today's topic is why men give up on their health and how to get it back. And why this topic is so important. I mean, we've done podcasts before on men's health, right? Like men's health updates and different men's health topics. Maybe it's hormones or, you know, something like that. But today we want to talk about why specifically we have noticed that in caring for a lot of men in our practice that they seem to maybe give up on their health a little more readily than women. Mm-hmm. I don't know that we can make that gross generalization, but it seems like it, of what we have observed. And, you know, we care for a lot of executives and entrepreneurs. And in my observation in caring for these people with you, I seem to notice that they go all in on their businesses. They go all in on building their business, caring for their family, you know, things that they really care about. But one of the things that they typically let go by the wayside is their health. And you've had your own journey with kind of reclaiming your health, which has been amazing. And you've talked about it on the podcast before. But specifically when we talk about somebody's physical health, why do you feel like they may give up on their physical health? Is there a certain trend or different categories that you may notice in caring for men?
Yeah, I suppose to give an individual answer, you'd have to really explore an individual.
Yes.
But on average, in the experience of taking care of hundreds of really, really successful people, I've kind of distilled it down to a handful of things that I see very commonly, and it starts with the idea of healthcare versus sick care. Mm-hmm. Number one, that's part of the reason why we exist at Brentwood MD anyways, because it's very difficult to get healthy going into a sick care model where everything is designed to identify and treat and optimize disease management. We get to do a lot of health care where we don't find disease, but we're optimizing and avoiding and delaying chronic disease rather than trying to just exclusively wait till you're sick enough to manage it well.
Right.
And I think what ends up happening, it happened in my experience, ignoring blood pressure for a long time. Many men have shared with me that I'm afraid of going into the doctor because I'm going to come out with 9 different medicines. Mm-hmm. And so it's this idea that it's not a place to go to get healthy. It's a place to go once you're sick enough that you need a doctor, which then kind of implies that I'm actively sick.
Yeah, it's not preventative at all, is it?
It's not preventative. And so I think at the highest level, many high-achieving men resist because it's almost admitting defeat. Mm-hmm. Going into a sick care model instead of having access to healthcare.
And I think the model itself is geared toward normal versus optimal, wouldn't you say? I mean, we talk about normal versus optimal a lot. The analogy that you use, which I love and I use with some of our members, is, you know, it's normal to drive 35 miles in a neighborhood, but it's not optimal on the highway. Yep. And that resonates with a lot of them. Like, oh yeah, there's two different ways to look at this. And I feel like the sick care model, they may go into it not feeling great and not, you know, having overt symptoms maybe, but just knowing they could feel a lot better and they're turned away because their labs are normal or their blood pressure is maybe borderline or something like that. But we tend to look at things and want to optimize them.
Yeah, no question. I mean, normal versus optimal is another root concept for what we do with our private members. And that is, normal is nothing more than a fancy way of saying common or average.
Yeah.
And when you're normal in a young person, that's usually pretty good because the average or common young person is pretty healthy. The challenge becomes as you age up into your peer groups, into your 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, and beyond, the average 40, 50, 60, 70-year-old is not all that healthy.
Right.
So normal probably shouldn't be our goal. And more and more, this idea of I want to be optimal, not normal. It's kind of similar to I ask men all the time, do you want to be a normal husband or an all-time great husband? Do you want to be a normal father? Do you want a normal business? No. On average, a normal marriage ends. On average, a normal business fails. Like, normal, it's instinctive to want to go beyond normal in other big areas of men's lives. But the fact that the sick care model pushes us towards accepting normal really does facilitate some of this phenomena that we see where men just tend to kind of put off on their health and ultimately give up on it.
Yeah. Talk to me a little bit about borderline diagnosis. You know, sometimes, and that's another downfall maybe of the sick care model. I feel like we're bashing it today, but it is deservedly so in some of these areas. But hey, doc, I was told I have borderline high blood pressure or I have borderline diabetes. How dangerous is that?
I call it the deadly diagnosis of borderline.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's bashing the system. It is what it is.
Yeah.
It is, we are where we are. We could debate how we got here, but here we are. And the challenge with being told things that are suboptimal is that the human experience on average will either hear I have or don't have something. And we tend to want to say you have a disease, but it's early stage disease, so it feels better to deliver it with the word, the you know, prefacing it by saying borderline. There's no borderline cancer, borderline diabetes, borderline pregnancy. There's no borderline, like you either have or don't have. And disease exists on a spectrum. On one end, you have the optimal human experience. As you move away from the optimal ranges and the optimal experience as a human, you start to get into suboptimal, and then you start to move into early disease, mid disease, late disease, end stage disease. And to call someone a borderline hypertension or borderline diabetes, what really should be said is you have diabetes. It's mild and it appears to be reversible if we make some radical changes now, but it's there. And most men, when they hear borderline, say, whew, I keep doing what I'm doing. I got away with it one more year. And oftentimes it's a matter of semantics or potentially not wanting to face the bitter truth in that you meet some criteria where we could go ahead and call this, but we want to be gentle with it. And while we need to be thoughtful in our delivery, all progress begins with telling the truth.
I love that.
So I think that really is a part of men really letting go of their health is they've been putting off borderline, 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 and they know that I'm probably not borderline anymore.
Yeah. Another area I think in physical health when it comes to men that we see quite often is they come to us having applied old strategies to new problems. Talk to me a little bit about how we differ in that area as far as maybe heart health goes or cancer detection, things like that.
This is part of the challenge of receiving healthcare in a sick care model is that most physicians, most of my peers, are so busy seeing 30, 40 patients a day. Mm-hmm. They're doing the best they can to provide the best service that they can, sure, and the best care they can, and still have something to give to themselves and their families by the time they get home. There isn't a bunch of obvious time to do self-study, self-learning, staying up to date with these things. And what I find, whether it was in the ER, moving through trauma situations, treating an acute heart attack, or managing diabetes in my practice, I find many physicians practice in a way that looks like the way we practiced 20 years ago. And the comfort level with just saying that was the way I trained really strikes me as a problem, mm-hmm, because we have better ways.
Yeah.
We have newer ways. Although acceptable and reasonable, it in a sick care model, we really aren't overly incentivized or encouraged in a traditional model to stay abreast to the latest and greatest. Because frankly, many of the docs who would be good ongoing students and learners and knowing about these things, we then are faced with this almost unovercomable challenge, and that is insurance companies typically don't pay for tip of the spear technology.
Right. Unless you're dying.
Unless you're dying. Unless you're sick enough.
Yeah, right.
Which again, the goal of getting healthy and managing disease many times stand in conflict of each other. Mm-hmm. Especially when there's a third party payer called insurance driving the economics behind all of this.
Yeah.
And in the end, patients don't get the care they need and deserve to get healthy, and physicians aren't given the incentivization and the infrastructure to provide care that would lead people to this. In an idealistic world, doctors would make everybody really healthy and they would be paid according to how healthy everybody got. Mm-hmm. But that would keep people out of hospitals and off medications and out of treatment centers and out of these things, which stands at odds with the current economic model of managing disease.
Yeah.
I think those four things really do present a lot of uphill challenges for men to hang on to their health and feel like there's a compelling future there.
Yeah, definitely. So I feel like we did a great job covering physical health. Thank you so much for those four points. What about emotional health? Mm. The first thing that comes to mind for me when we treat men in this realm is the work-life balance, mm-hmm, type of misnomer, maybe. Can you speak to that a little bit?
Yeah, I've spent a lot of time thinking about this. In the early days, mostly selfishly, because I was very much out of weight, out of balance. Mm-hmm. Through my experience, and by extension what I observe, I think many men have this idea that work-life balance done well is kind of like this. Mm-hmm. Like
linear.
Yeah, just eat. Like a scale.
Mm-hmm.
Perfectly balanced.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't really subscribe to that, mm-hmm, as what a work-life balance that's optimized would look like. I don't see it in nature. I see lots of things this way and then lots of things that way. I see a forest fire that destroys, and then a year later I see nothing but new life. I see roaring rapids that are destroying and carving out a mountain, and then I see it open up into a stream that isn't moving and all the life that's underneath. I see balance and harmony,
mm-hmm,
but in the micro. So macro balance, but micro, it's lots of exchange, mm-hmm, lots of back and forth. And so one of the things that I think men struggle with is getting a proper perspective on what work-life balance looks like optimally.
Mm-hmm.
In my perspective, there are seasons where life is going to be heavily weighted on one or the other.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to work your face off. you're going to be grinding, you're going to take risk, you're going to put it all on the line for the into the marketplace to provide, to make advancements, followed by there might be times where you back off pushing into the market, where you lean into your family and you're coaching a baseball game and you're showing up for your family on the weekends and you're taking a few extra vacations and creating a few extra moments. And it's this interplay between all in on the things that are most important, mm-hmm. with a net macro kind of neutrality, mm-hmm. Kind of like sports.
Yeah.
You know, there's an off season.
Mm-hmm.
And where I see most men get in trouble is they're looking for how to go hard in the market, hard at the family at the same time.
Yeah.
That's hard to pull off.
Mm-hmm.
And there might be moments where it looks like that, but on any given day, you likely will find a man leaning into his business or leaning into his family, mm-hmm. or leaning into his health. And that can all be part of the optimal journey. And so I just think redefining work-life balance to be more macro-balanced instead of micro-balanced.
Yeah, I love that. How do you feel about the traditional retirement mindset?
I think it's a death sentence.
What a bunch of garbage.
What a bunch of garbage. Yeah. I think the notion that you'll work hard, and if you do that long enough, maybe one day you'll get lucky enough to not do anything,
mm-hmm.
is a way to die.
Mm-hmm.
And the data does support that. I think some of the most recent literature is about 50% of people, mortality is about 50% the first 12 months after retirement.
Wow.
I always say, you send your mind to pasture, your body will follow.
Mm-hmm.
And the evidence and the epidemiology shows that. Humans need something to do. We need a reason to be. We need a reason to show up. And it can't just be self-serving.
Mm-hmm.
The idea that you have nothing to do is a way to communicate to your nervous system and to the universe that you're finished, yeah. contributing. And the data would say that Earth calls her parts back,
yeah.
when you're done contributing.
Wow.
Now, that's in the traditional Industrial Revolution, work hard for 20 years and we'll take care of you forever. That doesn't mean you can stop working on someone else's terms,
mm-hmm.
and you can begin to then pursue what excites you.
Mm-hmm.
But this idea that you work hard so that you can do nothing will not, statistically improbable, to lead to a long, vibrant life.
Yeah.
And so I think just reshaping the idea of traditional retirement mindset, like if you're not doing something that you could be excited about for the next 25, 30 years, then begin thinking about what your on-ramp to that would look like.
Yeah.
And I would implore people not to have a primary goal of waking up to do nothing.
Yeah.
That probably won't end well.
Mm-hmm. That's great. I know you ask me a lot when I plan to retire, and I don't have the answer for you,
because well, I have
I don't
to check,
want to think about it.
Because I'd be devastated.
I'm going to be bothering you for a long time.
Okay, so. Good.
Okay, good.
Deal.
How many men do you talk to that maybe they say something like, you know, Doc, this is all great. I'm just gonna rally. What does that mean to you?
First of all, I'm an anti-rallier.
Okay. That's a bunch of garbage too.
It's a bunch of garbage. I understand why men feel like they'll just rally.
Mm-hmm.
I'll do it later.
Mm-hmm.
I'm busy building my empire. I'm busy with kids. I'm busy, 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 busy. I'll do it later. Here's the truth. No one rallies.
Mm-hmm.
You might have some outliers as an exception. But the typical experience is something scary happens, or something scary almost happens, or there's some imminent suffering as a consequence of not prioritizing the right things that force you into taking action.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's back to building.
Yeah.
The humans are designed to expend a minimum amount of energy and effort to achieve the ideal outcome, and tie always goes to pleasure. Mm-hmm. It's not in our nature to not have anything to do and not pursue pleasure. Mm-hmm. And that means a life without discipline and prioritization, you will default towards the thing that in the quickest path and most reliable fashion will give you pleasure. Sometimes that pleasure is an ice cream sandwich. Sometimes it's applause in the marketplace. Sometimes it's closing one more deal. Sometimes it's, you know, something to do with the family, to be the hero. But putting in 45 to 90 minutes of strength training and resistance training when no one's awake before the sun is up, those are long applause. Mm-hmm. They don't come for late. And it is very difficult to perform when there's no feedback.
Yeah.
And so I understand why the temptation and the default is I'll rally later. Mm-hmm. But even if you were to carve an hour of discretionary time 5 days a week, chances are disproportionately higher that you will fill it with some other thing that isn't part of your long-term plan. Mm-hmm. Because most things that are essential require short-term suffering.
Yeah, it's true.
Short-term suffering, long-term pleasure. Mm-hmm. Short-term pleasure, long-term suffering on average.
Yeah.
And I'm just an anti-rallier. Mm-hmm. Like, it means you're not ready.
Yeah.
And sometimes men need to know that that's it. Mm-hmm. They're going to draw a line in the sand and that's it. No more, never again. I'm not doing that thing. Nobody weans off cigarettes. Nobody weans off booze. Nobody weans off bad habits. Like, you stop.
Yeah.
Or you don't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's amazing. And I feel like that's really how you reclaimed your health. You know, you kind of drew that line in the sand. And I remember you talking about Fat Aaron, like, he's done. I'm done with him.
I fired Fat Aaron.
You fired him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I did. I got into a place where, I mean, I was an athlete growing up. I was in the military, being strong and powerful and physically asserting myself physically was always something that I identified with. And then, like, even through medical school, but then seemingly in a window of like three, four years, I had a child, got out of residency, was working in the ER, trying to start a business, marriage. I put on like 40 something pounds of fat on my body. Mm-hmm. And I teach this stuff. And I was hypertensive. Mm-hmm. And I ignored it.
Weren't sleeping well.
I was completely, and in my nature, I'm a sleepy bear. But I just propped myself up with caffeine, mm-hmm. Working nights. I developed metabolic syndrome. Mm-hmm. You know, hypertensive, my cholesterol was all out of whack. I was insulin resistant. I had truncal obesity, fatty liver, the whole thing. Mm-hmm. And it was the culmination of two or three things at the very end when I finally was like, that's it.
Yeah.
And within 6 months, I had a trainer, I bought gym equipment, got a business coach, got a therapist. Like, I went all in, I need to clean this up. But that wasn't a rally process, it was a line in the sand.
Yeah.
And most people who know me know this version of me, which is far more congruent and aligned with Aaron from, you know, 10, 11 years old to 29. Mm-hmm. Than from like 30 to 38.
Yeah.
I think you asked me about rallying.
I did.
Yeah. Rallying is seductive thinking. Mm-hmm. And it rarely pans out to the outcome that people want.
Yeah.
What drives people to the outcome that they want is making a decision. Mm-hmm. Cutting off all other options, burning the boats.
Right.
That's how you do it.
Anything else you want to say about this emotional health realm for men?
Yeah, I think real quick, in kind of as an offshoot of work-life balance, this idea of stress management, I think it's very important. I have a lot of thoughts around this and a lot of conviction around stress. Mm-hmm. To be alive is to experience stress. There's only one stress-free person, and that person isn't breathing.
Right.
To be alive is to have challenges, and to overcome challenge requires overcoming friction. That's stress. And with each level of success or milestone or breakthrough, there are moments where you feel a relief of stress, but it's only because you don't have proper optics on the new solution. You don't even know what your new challenges are until you do. And then you're like, oh my gosh, here are these new challenges. So in my experience, this idea of stress management isn't about stress elimination. I find people who don't seem to be tethered by stress have somehow along the way become better at managing. They have better tools. Mm-hmm. Stress keeps coming at them, but they seem to navigate these new stressors in a way or with some mental framework or system to overcome stress and develop new capabilities. Mm-hmm. But I wanted to say, like, every level of success that you crave, the thing that's holding you back now and the freedom that that will create, there will be new stressors in that freedom that you were unaware of that will then feel like you're tethered there. But those are higher quality problems. Mm-hmm. Where I begin to get worried with people is when they continue to have really low quality problems, mm-hmm. or continue to suffer from the same problems. Because that tells me maybe we're not learning the lesson.
Yeah.
Because we're not able to apply the lesson so that we can go to the next level. But yeah, this idea that success will breed the removal of stress. Mm-hmm. Did I say that right? That success will
right.
create an environment where it's stress-free, mm-hmm. and that's just not the case. There are new stressors always down the road.
Oh, absolutely.
And then one last thing I will say on the emotional side of things that keep men from really continuing to invest in their health is we live in a world that is hyper-connected. Mm-hmm. And we've never had more connectivity at our fingertip, but craved authentic connection more. There are a lot of people who everybody knows their name, and they feel completely alone through life. Mm-hmm. And as somebody who has experienced some of those emotions, I can tell you that there's not much more that hurts worse than not actually being alone, but feeling alone. Mm-hmm. And mental health is a real thing.
Yeah.
And loneliness and the lack of connectivity, we're having a lot of unintended consequences from this hyper-connected world. And I think men are quick to give up on health when they see all of these challenges through the physical health, the sick care model, mm-hmm. I can't find work-life balance. It's easy to just kind of, we'll see how it goes, man.
Yeah.
You know?
I'm just going to give up.
Yeah, well, I hope for the best. Mm-hmm. And they end up hanging, if they're lucky, they hang on hope. And hope is wonderful and it's beautiful, but it's not a strategy.
Yeah.
And in the end, when something scary happens, if there's not enough runway, we've worked with mm-hmm. some of the most successful people in the world. And in that moment of scary news, they would give up every ounce of success, every ounce of wealth accumulation, every ounce of fame, connection, to restore their health.
Yeah.
Nobody rallies.
Right. Yeah.
And you can get to the point on this journey where no amount of check writing will improve your situation.
Yeah.
If you have the ability to write checks to make problems go away, you should. Mm-hmm. If you have that ability and you have a time horizon, you should do it now.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I love that. When men give up on their health, we have noticed, and you've touched on this a little bit, there's sort of a cycle they go through, or that happens to them, maybe is a better way to frame it. And the punchline ends with regret. Mm. You've done a wonderful video on this, and we'll link it here in the show notes, but talk to me about this cycle of leading that leads them to regret.
whether it's the physical or emotional or a combination of the two that are leading, that are impacting a men's health journey, right away, the first level is it leads to inconsistent results. Mm-hmm. So any effort that is deployed, you get hit or miss. Yeah. Well, if it's inconsistent and it's not repeatable, then you're not going to get the result you want, mm-hmm. which can then further facilitate the frustration. Inconsistent results lead to then an unpredictable outcome. Mm-hmm. And if you start stacking enough unpredictable outcomes, you begin to accumulate losses. Mm-hmm. And these losses in the micro begin to stack. Mm-hmm. And these stacked losses begin to, I always say, the ultimate red flag in a man is apathy, indifference. Mm-hmm. Careful, 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 careful. If you're feeling this, if someone you love as a man is beginning to exhibit apathy, the indifference towards things you know they care about, be very, 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 very careful. Mm-hmm. Because the next step is regret. Mm-hmm. And a regret is very difficult to unwind. Mm-hmm. And to me, and this is just my point of view, regret is the worst human emotion, mm-hmm. all time. When I take care of people, either in the ER setting or in a practice where they are out of time, mm-hmm. and they can't make things right, that's that deep sense of like, if I could change it, I would, but I can't. If that can be avoided, it should be avoided at all cost, because I'm just not convinced there isn't a worse emotional state.
Yeah.
And apathy is kind of the gateway. Mm-hmm. That you're on the clock. But it starts with inconsistency, which leads to not being able to predict outcomes. Mm-hmm. And most men thrive with predicting outcomes. We tend to be creatures of habit, mm-hmm. for better and worse. and those that lack of ability to predict then leads to losses, and those losses then stack. And it's this vicious cycle of more inconsistency and even worse at predicting, until you're just like, what's the point?
Yeah.
And so I think life where you don't get a hold of this begins looking like that.
Yeah.
That's the story for a lot of men.
Mm-hmm. Wow. That's great. So let's talk about a clear action plan for people. We always like to end the podcast with, you know, well, this is great. Now what? What do I do now? And one of our shared gurus is Tony Robbins. He talks about clarity a lot, and one of his sayings is clarity is power. I love that. I think the first action step that we need to impart is get clear on what you want, mm-hmm. and why you want it.
No question.
Yeah.
Yeah. People always ask me, hey doc, what do you think about fill in the blank? And people who know me well now, they're like, in the background, they'll be like, It depends.
You know, that's right.
Like, what do you want? Mm-hmm. What do you want to happen? Mm-hmm. And then the follow-up is, why?
Yeah.
Why is that the goal? Because mm-hmm. if someone knows what they want and they know why they want it, the odds are very, very high that they're going to find a way or make a way to go do it. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I agree with you. Clarity is the step. Clarity on what you want and why you want it.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, the next step would then be find your team. We talk a lot about finding our team. If you think that's us, awesome. Mm-hmm. BrentwoodMD.com. Call us, email us, inquire. If it's not, that's cool too. Find your people. Find your team who can help you navigate your health journey. Mm-hmm. Resist the temptation to go into this vortex towards apathy and regret. And don't wait. And even if you don't feel the energy to do it, just write the check so that somebody else will be accountable for it, and then they'll poke you. Mm-hmm. Like,
and you already touched on, this was one of the key aspects that helped you.
Totally.
You know, I got a trainer. I got a therapist. You know,
my trainer, who's a dear friend of mine, and he's the only person I've ever given a dollar, mm-hmm. to work me out. He's always like, Aaron, you don't need me anymore. Like you're fine. Like, what are you doing? And I'm like, you don't understand. Mm-hmm. This has got nothing to do with you.
Right. You're confused.
I like my time with you too, But I also, I like being accountable mm-hmm. to myself.
Yeah.
And if I'm not interested in wasting my time and money. And even on days I want to show up, I work out 50% harder than I would be able to push myself because of you.
Yeah.
Like, it's got nothing to do with you, sir. It's got to do with me. And I understand that I like to hold myself accountable to the things that I know my future self mm-hmm. is capable of achieving. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a nuance that we haven't talked about, is that part of the way I can hold myself accountable is I hold myself accountable to my ideal self.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Who do I want to be? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And future Aaron says, get up.
Yeah.
Go work out.
Do it when you don't want to.
I'm not concerned that you're sleepy. Right. You know, or whatever. Mm-hmm. Just suffocate excuses.
Yeah.
Now, you can't do that for all things.
Right.
But on the things that you've deemed to be your essentials, in for me, my life hack is I suffocate all excuses for the things that I know are important to me. Mm-hmm. So my faith, my finances, my fitness, my family, hey, they're all F's. That's pretty cool. I never even realized that. but point is, it's not even about my trainer.
Yeah.
It's about me.
Yeah. That's great. We also talk about auditing for friction.
Yeah.
To get great results and to meet your goals. You and I talk a lot about that just in our daily kind mm-hmm. of conversations. You know, if I'm struggling with something, or even before we hopped on here, you're like, what's wrong with you? Something's going on. I'm like, mm-hmm. something happened over the weekend. I'll just talk about it tomorrow, you know. But where is that friction of like, maybe you need to hire a meal service? You know, we have mm-hmm. one member right now. He's down in Miami at a wellness center. He loves it. And all, you know, right away he's texting me saying, I can't wait to get back. Nutrition is a, you know, issue that I really need to work on that I've loved here. And I'm like, do they send you off with a plan, or what's the plan? And he's like, well, I'm already thinking about hiring somebody to cook my meals for me, or, you know, buy food, or, you know, that's healthy, mm-hmm. something like that. I'm like, that's wonderful. If you can outsource that and have the financial capability to do that, that's a friction point for him, right? Mm-hmm. So he's already starting to do that, which is great. But yeah.
I mean, the point is, what does your ideal self want?
Yeah.
And where in your current life are your actions and your goals not mapping? Mm-hmm. And we call those friction points. Mm-hmm. Where you find congruency, move on. Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm not quite doing this thing right. Dig there. It's a big red X on your map that says dig here. Mm-hmm. So we call it audit for friction against your ideal self and your current set of behaviors. Where are they not congruent? Mm-hmm. Those are friction points. And by the way, it has to be against your own goals.
Yeah.
And against your own, these can't be other people's, or it's, again, it's unpredictable outcomes. Because mm-hmm. you could achieve a goal and it's not even yours, and now you're pandering to somebody that you really like. Why did I, that's not even, like, it has to be, it's deeply unique and uniquely personal to the individual. Mm-hmm. And then the last one, we stole this from a mentor of ours, Dan Sullivan, in his amazing book called The Gap and the Gain. Once you find friction, measure backwards. Mm-hmm. Measure backwards, not against the ideal self, but measure backwards to where you started from, mm-hmm. and you'll notice progress. Humans need to notice progress, or they will stop and give up on their health.
Yeah.
And a man, as I'm looking through the notes, who's getting all of these physical health friction points and these emotional friction points and suffering with these inconsistent and unpredictable outcomes, it's very difficult to measure against your ideal self, because you'll stop, because that you don't like that report card.
Right.
But if you're noticing progress, you'll keep fighting the fight. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so measuring backwards keeps you out of the gap being between where you are and your ideal self. Use it to orient yourself, but you measure backwards.
Yeah, always.
Always.
I love that.
Yeah.
So good. Well, thanks so much for your time today.
You're a really good interviewer.
Thank you. This is my first time, and I feel like I did pretty well.
Long time listener, first time interviewer.
Right. We should try this again sometime.
That was really good, Jen. Thank you.
Yeah. Any famous last words?
This, all playfulness aside, if you're a man listening to this, or you know a man and you're listening to this, this is a really big deal. There are a lot of men who punt the back half of life. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't have to be that way.
Yeah. I love that.
Yeah.
Well, that wraps it up for this episode. Thanks again so much. We'll see you next time.
Thanks, Jen. Thank you so much for your attention. It's the most valuable thing you could ever offer me, and I don't take it for granted. You can find out more about today's episode and all of the other resources we have at BrentwoodMD.com. Be sure to check out all the other content we've created by searching BrentwoodMD on LinkedIn, Facebook, YouTube, and Instagram. If our content has ever provided you with value, it would mean the absolute world to me if you subscribed to our show and left a review. This helps us ensure more people just like you can find our content so they can begin their journey of optimizing health. To learn more about the concierge services we provide our members, visit BrentwoodMD.com. And now for the obligatory disclaimer. This podcast is for general information only and does not constitute the practice of medicine or the giving of medical advice, as no doctor-patient relationship has been formed. The content of this podcast is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Users should seek the advice of their own medical professional providers.